Astrologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
The live stream, it is Thursday, March 11th, 2021. It's the hoaxiversary of 311. And I'm in the live stream with Rod Jenkinson. It's his avatar's name.
How's it going,
Rod? Rod?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Where are you again in the world?
I'm in the very south of New Zealand, on Stewart Island.
Oh, right. We talked years ago.
Yeah, we did. It was episode 86, and it was like 5 years ago, maybe. Maybe more than that.
Were you Rod Jenkinson back then? On the old audio?
Well, sure. I gave you my name is Rod. And so that was before Discord or anything. So, yeah. I have an introduction to myself on your blog, but I made one at that time. I guess it's still there.
Yeah, I haven't deleted anything. Oh, fantastic. Well, I got about half an hour, so let's catch up. Catch up. How are things in the Five Eyes Nation of New Zealand with Christina or whatever her name is, Adern, and you've had the New Zealand mosque massacre hoax? What do you say about all that?
How is it here? It's okay here, I suppose. I actually left New Zealand. I spent several years overseas since I've last spoken to you, and now I find myself somewhat stuck back here. I spent 2 years in Vietnam, and then I had 2 years in Burma.
Wow, that's crazy. Is that for work or pleasure?
Well, that was because it pleasured me to be there, but I was working while I was there as well, I was teaching. Yeah, I was teaching over there.
Oh, nice. And did you want to go back to New Zealand, or did you want to stay?
No, I didn't. I came back at the insistence of my family members. So that was the beginning of April last year, due to all the COVID madness. And New Zealand was like one of the first countries to go into the heavy lockdown. And came back right in the middle of that, and haven't really been able to leave since. And now Burma's in quite a state of turmoil, so I doubt that I'll be able to get back there anytime soon, unfortunately.
But you would like to go back there if you could.
Yeah, my work there was really very satisfying. As I said, I was a teacher, and I had about 200 students in a primary school, and I was teaching them English composition, but I was allowed to deviate from any of the textbooks or any of the curriculum or anything. And you know, children being curious, they had a lot of questions, and so I'd be able to go off topic a lot, and no one ever sort of criticized me or kind of told me off for, you know, giving them kind of, I just tried to teach them to be able to think critically, you know.
Oh, nice. Did you give them some truth?
Yeah, I did. I mean, they're primary school children, so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Implied truth.
Implied truth, yeah. I mean, sometimes they'd ask me things. There was one particular class I can remember where they wanted my opinion on whether I liked Trump or Obama better. And, I just told them straight up that I don't like any of them, and I don't trust any of them. And yeah, they were quite shocked by that notion. It was certainly the first time they'd ever heard anybody say that. So
yeah. Where is Burma? It's near China or Myanmar or India somewhere?
Yeah,
around there?
Well, it's officially called Myanmar now, but
oh right,
yeah, I don't know.
Okay,
it's the old name of it. So it's
what is the big deal about Myanmar? Because I listened to Kevin J. Johnson, who's a Canadian masktivist. And he went over to Myanmar last year or a year or two ago, and he got some pictures of some atrocities. I don't know who was doing them, but and he was thrown in jail by Canada when he got back here, his own country, for they wanted the pictures. I don't exactly know what the story is, but what is happening over there? Why is it so controversial?
It's complicated. It's in between Thailand and India and China. And it's very, very strategically important for China. China has, I think it's 700-mile pipelines that go from the sort of southwest coast. So they ship their oil and gas to there and then pipe it up straight up into the guts of China. And otherwise, they'd have to go like all the way round through, you know, down past Malaysia and whatnot. So they've established those pipelines, I think only within the last sort of 6 or 7 years. And
so it's a pipeline thing. Who's
yeah?
So so it's strategic for pipeline. Oh, okay, that makes
it, in my view, yeah, and for other reasons too. It's a drug manufacturing region, or
okay.
not the entire country, but one sort of region of the country is where most of the world's methamphetamine is manufactured.
In Myanmar.
Yeah, and I think it's the second biggest poppy producer in the world.
Oh, after Afghanistan.
Yeah. Yeah, and
okay.
So there's a lot. It's very complicated, and there is a lot going on there. And in the 2 years that I was there, I managed to get my head around, you know, quite a bit of it. But yeah, so there's like 130 different ethnic groups, and the main government is and sort of has always been, it's like mostly the one ethnic group, which is the Burmese. And so a lot of the ethnic groups, the smaller groups, are a little bit downtrodden and they feel underrepresented and so on and so forth. And so they all have their own militias, and there's pretty much constant conflict going on, particularly around the border regions. So I don't know what... I haven't listened to Kevin J. Johnson, but presume he may have been discussing the Yakine state, which is on the west at the border with Bangladesh, where the Rohingya people live.
Okay.
And yeah, it does seem as though a bit of genocide went on there.
Yeah, he was talking about genocide, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So, being the curious person that I am, I was living in Mandalay, which is right in the center of the country, and it's absolutely miles from there. But I took an expedition to that region to see what I could see for myself. And... yeah, I did satisfy myself that some pretty nasty things had been happening there. I didn't see any actual... I saw no one killing anyone or nothing like that, but I did see the regions where, yeah, areas of burned villages and things like that, and I talked to some Rohingya people. So most of them have fled across the border into Bangladesh, and they are currently, well, they've been there for several years, and they've sort of been in a a camp there, and I think they've recently had their situation upgraded. They've been given an island with some sort of reasonably better facilities. I think they're a little bit happier with their situation there now. So that's the majority of them that have fled, but there's still Rohingyas in Myanmar, a little bit back from the border, and they are prisoners. They are not allowed to leave their villages. They're not considered citizens, so they don't have ID, and so they're trapped in their villages. I talked to some of those guys, and they just said, we live in a cage. We're not, like, they described it, you know, they said, sort of pointed to the bridge over there, they said, you know, we're not allowed to go past that bridge. We're not allowed to go past the police station in the other direction. And, they sort of detailed to me a relatively constant state of fear that they live in.
So are the Rohingyans blocking something? Are they on someone's land that has resource? Or are they in the way of a pipeline or what?
Yes. It's the exact area where the Chinese are intending to...
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Chinese are intending to develop a very large port to go with their pipeline in that area.
Okay. So the Chinese need gas, liquid natural gas, liquid propane, oil. So they need a port there to bring in the ships from wherever to pipe it into China.
Yeah, they are already set up for that, but I think perhaps not on the scale that they... once. Yeah.
China has insatiable energy needs as the power plant manufacturing center of the entire world. I don't even think they're done growing yet, not even by a long shot.
Yeah. I've never been to China. It would be interesting to scope the whole thing out, you know?
Bottom line is that when you're in the way of business progress, get ready for genocide, get ready to be moved. I guess the bottom line is they're probably offered to move, and if you can't get them to move, then you just you threaten genocide, and then you start doing a little bit, and then you start burning the place down, and then all of a sudden the people are on the move. It's like scaring a herd of antelope. You kill or hurt a couple of them, and next thing you know, they're on the march somewhere else. And you have to, with humans, I guess you have to guide them as to where you want them to land.
Yeah, I could agree with that. The other thing about the particular Rakhine, it's actually pronounced Yakhine, but it's spelled R-H-A-K-I-N-E. The Yakhine region is that they're also not Burmese people there. They are Arakan people. And so that's one of the minor ethnic groups. And so during this period where the Rohingyas had most of their troubles, that was sort of done to them by both the Arakans and the Burmese. And once most of the Rohingyas had left, then the Arakans went back to being in conflict with the Burmese in that area. So, I don't know what's happening there now. Like, you know, they've just had a coup, right? So I'm not sure. Are you aware that they've just had a coup there? Ab, can you hear me? Okay, well.
1-2? 2-2-1-2.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, I probably got disconnected even though it says it was. So I'm guessing whoever is or was in charge, or is in charge, rather, the military, they're on board with the China plan.
Seems to be, yeah.
You know, we see it on a smaller scale everywhere in the world. For instance, even near to where I live, they want to put a Amazon warehouse. And it's on protected wetlands, you know, where the ducks and the fishes are. And it's a general rule, nobody, when you live somewhere, nobody wants anyone else to come into the area. No one wants development, even if you're in the middle of a city state. And inevitably, you just have to tell the local people, listen, the province, the greater good, they want this area paved. We don't care about the ducks and the fishes, so shut up. And sort of the Chinese way of business. That's the beauty of a dictatorship, a one-party system. There is no opposition. So if you want to build a highway, it gets done. And I think it's the same around the world. And like I said, on a smaller scale, we want to build another little part of the highway system where I live in Toronto. And, of course, nobody in the path of said highway wants it built. And then they team up with the people that don't want any growth, and they want everyone to live in glass towers where there already are glass towers. And therefore, it takes one executive dictatorship order by a majority government, even like we have here. They just say to hell with all the studies, all the plan. We're just building it. That's how it works. And, you know, it's no mystery, and I understand it, and I'd understand if I was in the way of a highway and I didn't want to move, would probably be tough nuts for the most part, but a lot of people, groups, they don't go along with that. I don't blame them, but that to me is on a small scale, on a big scale, what happens all around the world.
That is
why the worldwide takeover is happening, because it's really hard to compete with China with their dictatorship, because you can't get anything done in all these other first world countries, because, you know, all these pesky people have too many rights. They have too many queries. They have too many opinions. We can't have that. It just slows everything right down.
Yeah, absolutely. Too much freedom.
Well, it gets in the way of progress. So I see it from both ways. I'm not saying I'm for it.
It depends on what, you know, you consider progress to be, or whether progress is beneficial, you know, to us. It's seems mostly not to be.
Exactly. If you consider paving over farmland progress, then build that highway.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to be feeding us recycled toilet water and caterpillars. You don't need farmland. You can just pave it over.
Yeah, right. I don't know what's happening in Burma at the moment. I'm not sure as to the reasons for why they've had this sudden change. They had basically a faux kind of a democracy there for a few years. And now they've had this military, seems to be pretty aggressive and violent military takeover, but it was already run by the military. In my understanding of it, their parliamentary system was such that the military already had, you know, 51% of the votes or something. So it was always really pretty much widely acknowledged that they were already sort of still the ones in charge, but for some reason
they've made it official.
Yeah, I guess so. And like the figurehead that they had for the country, Daw Aung San Suu Kyi, she's extremely popular. You would not believe how popular she is. And so she's been there. You know, they call her Our Lady. And so she's been their kind of puppet actor kind of figurehead for, you know, the past few years. And there's some pretty shady connections with her and her family. Going back to, actually, I posted in the Discord a while ago, her father was previously the leader of the country at one point, and then he was assassinated, supposedly, and That's part of their
right.
kind of founding national myth. And but yeah, her father was pals with H.G. Wells.
Oh my goodness,
so,
isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. So her kind of position is in my view, has always just been a kind of an artificial construct anyway. I don't know why, you know, what it is that now they've decided on this very sudden change. So they've abducted her, basically, is the story. And, so they're protesting and the military are using real bullets to disperse the crowds and whatnot. They're dropping tear gas on them from military aircraft.
Well, do they have a COVID narrative running there, or?
Their COVID narrative is pretty weird, eh? It's, because I was there for that. So, and I was, Mandalay is not very far from Wuhan. And so,
oh.
I think it's like 500 kilometers or something. It's not very far. And anyway, so we used to have several flights a week direct from Wuhan, and there's like the main supply road up to China. It's basically, if you just keep going on that road, you'd get to Wuhan. And so when I, you know, when COVID first came on the scene, I was skeptical of it immediately, obviously. Having been a fakeologist for a long time and, you know, read about, I watched the videos of Event 201 and so on and so forth. So I was fairly up with the play. But, what I did was I took an expedition so it began to be the feeling of people that, oh, it must be here in the country, you know. Officially it was not. But this was the kind of general feeling of the people. And so I took an expedition on this road leading to Wuhan. I just went in that direction and I visited hospitals. And,
wow. Did you take any pictures?
No. No, I did. Well, actually, maybe, but no, not specifically. I just inquired as to whether they were seeing any kind of extra admissions of respiratory disease or anything like that. And they were just like, no, like not at all. And, so I did that. And, what was the other thing about? Oh, the other thing about that was that, in the country, Facebook is the main method of communication for most people. It's very, it's
wow.
like even more
crazy.
Yeah. It's even more widely used than it is in Western countries, I think. And so, there was a Facebook group started for COVID-19 Myanmar. And when I first joined that group, there was like 6,000 members. And that was probably at the beginning of March last year or maybe the middle of February. And it rapidly grew. And then, so I was fairly active on it. You know, asking questions and trying to ascertain, you know, and you can get information from around the country, like if anybody has actual reports of anybody sick. And so that rapidly grew, and they invited me to be a moderator on that group. And we had, I think it was like 750,000 people on it.
Wow.
Which... yeah, it was massive, and I've deleted my Facebook account, and so I don't know what that particular group is doing now, but I was behind the scenes of all of that, seeing all the information that was coming through, and yeah, just absolutely nothing, just no evidence or reports of anything legitimate going on. So,
how many people live in Myanmar? How many people in the country?
They say 55 or 54 million.
Wow, that's very dense population, I believe.
Yeah, relatively. Yeah, it's like a lot of the Asian countries. It's you know, there's people everywhere.
Right.
Yeah, it's not that small though. It's quite big. It's, for example, I think it's probably, I'd say it's at least twice as big as Vietnam, and Vietnam has like 90 something million.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not as dense as some other places. Mandalay, the city that I was at, was, I think, 1 million.
Okay. That can't, yeah. Is that must be low down the ranks of the city populations then in Myanmar?
No, it's actually, I think, the second biggest.
The
biggest is Yangon, and I think they say it's like 5 million.
Okay.
Yeah, other than that, it's all just kind of spread out. A lot of people are still very rural, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So now you're back in Stewart Island, which is as quiet as it can get, I guess, in New Zealand, to be, you know?
Yeah, 400 people here. Although what we've got going on now is that it's a national park, and it's tourism is the main industry. It's been the main industry for a few years, well, for like maybe 20 years. And we used to have a lot of international tourists come, and so now there aren't any international tourists, but because New Zealanders also can't go over and do our overseas holidays, a lot of people are finally checking off that bucket list item, which is to come to Stewart Island. So it's actually really busy here at the moment in terms of tourism. Yeah. It's a different demographic than what we used to have.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
400 people, I think I said this, you know, 5 years ago, you must know almost everybody.
Yeah, we do, yeah. And my family business was my mother's, is now in the hands of my brother, is the one general store here on the island. It's a small supermarket.
Yeah.
So, you know, not everybody gets all of their groceries from us. A lot of people get things sent over, but they still have to come and get, like, the dailies, like bread and milk and stuff. So worked there a lot, you know, so myself and my family in particular know everybody here. Yeah.
Isn't that something? What's your what's the mask policy in your store?
There are no masks. There's no masks. It's, It's not mandated in the country. It's not mandated countrywide. The mandate is for only on public transport. And we do actually have public transport. What's considered public transport? There's a plane and a ferry. And so they're asking people to mask up. I've only been on that plane once. And I just told them I was exempt, and they didn't challenge it at all. And so, yeah, so that was fine. But
in the store, they're okay. They're not playing the masquerade party. Interesting.
Not this far south. I think they maybe in Auckland. It's always Auckland where they're doing all of the, I don't know, what are we going to call them, drills or whatever. But when they, like, find a case of community transmission, Auckland goes into a bit more of a shutdown. I'm just not really privy to what that's actually like, you know, having not actually been there during any of this. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to call it. We're all doing drills over and over again. Yeah, that's a great way of describing it, because it is a drill.
Yeah,
if you're just acting out what it would be like if it was real, which it actually could never be, because I don't believe disease is contagious at all. Then it's a drill. Yeah, it's just a simulation, a drill. Yeah, you're totally right.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird to me, you know, like being where I am and not actually having any of it in my face, or having to actually deal with it personally, but I'm very much aware of it through your website, your Discord, and...
Would you like to support Fakeologist.com and all the content we're creating? We operate on the value-for-value principle, where you pay whatever you can for whatever value you feel you've received. We accept donations in almost every form, from PayPal to Bitcoin. Please go to Fakeologist.com/donate for your payment options. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting that because you hang out on my Discord and my website and Fakotube, that you get a lot of the information that you otherwise wouldn't get and probably don't even need any of it to bother your life down in the bottom of the world. It's crazy. Like all this strife, and you're just as close to the action as I am, and I'm in the middle of it.
Yeah. It is weird, and I'm somewhat addicted to kind of following all the narratives and things, you know. It's probably unhealthy for me, and I should just spend less time doing that, but I have a lot of time on my hands. this is the problem. I mean,
I'm sure.
Because I don't know what I'm going to... It's hard for me to plan the future very well. I very much loved teaching in a position where I was allowed to teach anything I wanted. And
hey, by the way, did you need any kind of credentials to teach, or could you just speak English clearly and that's all you need over there?
More or less, yeah, that's all. That's all I needed for my jobs. Yeah, I guess their government didn't have any kind of oversight on private schools, checking anyone's qualifications or anything. You needed a degree and to be a native English speaker. But so if I was, you know, if I wanted to be a teacher I don't want to be a teacher in New Zealand. Like, there's no way I would want to participate in the brainwashing, basically.
Yeah. So, could you make money doing that in Myanmar?
I got paid more than I've ever been paid in New Zealand, but like on an hourly rate. Yeah, I did. And
how would that compare to being a teacher in New Zealand? Do they make big bucks in New Zealand?
I'm not really sure. I just had my situation set up so that I worked 3 hours a day, and I could live very comfortably and could travel a lot and kind of fulfill my kind of own personal interests with my free time. I don't know. I mean, I never really added it up for an hourly rate though. Yeah. I got paid more there than I ever have here, and it was tax free. So yeah, they just paid me cash. And I had a side gig. My side gig was in the afternoons, twice a week, teaching English to some of the lower staff and consulting to the training department of the pipelines that we spoke about earlier. So,
interesting.
Yeah, so that was at their main headquarters, which is just outside of Mandalay. Like a massive building, a massive complex, like all brand new and very fancy. And when I first got the call about that, I got a telephone call one day, and it was someone. They said, "Oh, we're looking for someone to assist in our training department." And I was out on the street, and it was super busy and loud. I couldn't really hear the person very well, and so I understood that they wanted me to do some work or whatever. I said, okay, cool. Well, you just email me the address. I'll just come there tomorrow. I'll come to your business, and we can just discuss things in person. So they didn't give me the name of the place. And so I got this taxi out there, and I arrived there, and I come to this place. Very unusual for Myanmar, like massive complex. And I'm like, whoa, holy shit, what is this about? Like, and then I'm like, oh, this is a fucking this is a pipeline company. Wow, okay, cool, this is different. Like, for me, it was totally outside of my experience. And, yeah, I rocked in there and sat down, and they interviewed me for, like, an hour. And basically, they all just wanted to ask me questions about New Zealand. that was...
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
like...
Who was interviewing you? Burmese people or Americans? Or who's running the thing? Who's running the
Chinese
show?
People.
Chinese, yeah.
Chinese,
oh,
yeah. Chinese people. And so, yeah, they were pretty satisfied with the interview, and then I sort of started, like, the next week. But so I had these classes that I used to do in their main boardroom. And so, like, I don't know, imagine the biggest table you've ever seen. And I'm sat at the head of this table. With, like, all the students there. It was crazy. Like, for me, it was a very, like I said, so, like, something I'd never experienced or expected to experience. But it was kind of cool. But that boardroom was on the second floor, and there was one whole wall of it was a window. And the window was always closed. The curtains were always closed, but... They did show me behind the curtains on one occasion that behind that, it looked down into the main control room for the entire pipeline. And it was like a NASA kind of control room, you know, with like a giant screen on the wall and, you know, many desks lined up with computers. And so they showed it to me, and that was cool. There was no one in there. No one was doing anything. And I was like, why is no one in there? Why doesn't it look like it's doing anything? And I don't know what the explanation, they gave me some very vague explanation. I don't know. Maybe it's only necessary to operate it from there in kind of emergency situations or something. I don't know. But... on several other occasions, I would arrive before any of the students arrived, and so I would always peer behind this curtain, and there was never anybody in there.
So you were training pipeline employees, lower level English? Is that what the gig was?
Yes, but they were mostly like secretaries and in the finance department, things like that.
Right. But you were just teaching them English, basic English, so they could get by.
Pretty basic, yeah. Yeah. It was an optional thing for them. It was, yeah.
So if they want to improve their English, yeah.
Yeah, but that English was the official language of their company. So, yeah, they wanted it. Lady who I liaised with quite a bit, was the head translator for their company. And she was an interesting lady. She was really interesting, actually. She invited me into her office for chats after classes and stuff quite a lot. And she had three different translations of, goodness me, what's the book? This is terrible that I can't remember. What's the book that was made into a movie several times? Oh, The Great Gatsby, right? So she had I haven't read it, but she had three different Chinese translations of The Great Gatsby. And she was unsatisfied with any of those, and so she was working on her own translation of The Great Gatsby into Chinese, like the best.
Oh, that's
version.
Funny.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, funny. I see. Oh, that's
just... So yeah, it was a very interesting thing for me to do, you know, and be in that kind of environment. And yeah, like I said, I mean, they all want to move to New Zealand. So a lot of our conversations were just like about that.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. Okay, Rod. Well, I'm in my driveway now, but that was a great conversation. And
cool.
Let's do it again. I have to eat my dinner now, but for sure let's chat again for
later
this morning or whatever it is.
It's just after midday here. 12:30 on Friday. Yeah. Okay, bro.
Okay.
Sweet is.
Okay, maybe we'll have another we'll do another chat later on or next time. But yeah, thanks for the info. Great info.
Hey, no worries. All right.
All right. Take care.
Sure.
That's all, folks.